Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Brian Moore's Full Contact in association with The Telegraph. I'm Brian Moore and back in the studio this week is the former England and British Lions fly half Rob Andrew. Hello Rob.
Hi Brian, how are you?
Okay, headlines. Dylan Hartley is out of England's South Africa summer tour with concussion. In a statement he has said, I'm very disappointed that I will not be available for selection for Saints' remaining Premiership games as well as England's tour of South Africa. It's been recommended by specialists that I take a break this summer, and whilst I find that decision hard to accept, it's important I listen to that advice. I intend to use this time to fully recover from my injury so I can be ready to hit the ground running when pre-season training starts later this summer. Well, this is, I think, his third absence from concussion. They were quite long absences for the first one, certainly a couple of months. And whilst it's difficult to know about concussion because it's obviously not visible, I can't imagine that successive concussions get any better.
No, look, it's the big subject of the day for the game, isn't it? For lots of reasons. And you know, we've seen quite a lot of players have repeated concussions and, and trying to make a decision about when do you come back? If you have a few more, and George North had a few as well, a few bad ones. And then you know, Mike Brown had a few as well. And it must be really tough as a player, you know, given what we're now beginning to learn about the future and where these things might take you. It's quite a hard call, I think. Dylan's had a lot this year. He hasn't really played much rugby this year, you know, and trying to make a judgment call as a coach on form.
Well, you can't because he's not had any.
Well, that's the problem Eddie had during the Six Nations, really. Yeah. He wanted him as captain. He clearly believes he should be there as captain. But every sort of time he's gone out, really, he's almost played less game time. And it's becoming a problem now for the England setup, really, as are one or two other things which we talked about during the Six Nations. I suspect it's been pretty obvious that he wasn't going to go on the tour for some time. And it's really a case now of, you know, does Jamie George step up? Does he become the starter? Played for the Lions during the summer, last summer. And where does it leave Dylan going into the start of next year?
Because you've got to look at this dispassionately and ruthlessly. It's not anything anyone wants to visit on Dylan Hartley. Personally, no axe to grind there, but at some point, Eddie Jones has got to decide, is he going to give me a string of games where he can regain not just his fitness, but his form? Because Jones has been very keen to remind people that this is the top tournament, that you have to be at your very best. And if England don't take enough players, and not just 15, but more players who are not only good enough, but experienced enough and on form and talented enough, then they won't win the Cup. And if he has to make difficult decisions with players who, let's face it, have been tremendous servants over the years, make no bones, no apologies about using that phrase, then he'll be letting himself down and he won't be doing what he is demanding of players. And I'm afraid it's unfortunate with Dylan, but if this concussion keeps him out over the summer and beyond, then that really is a significant thing. I think not starting the season would be a very big blow for him.
Yeah, and whether it's concussion or whether it's just other things that have meant that his form you know, even going back, he wasn't selected to go on the Lions tour.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of, in itself, tells you something about what maybe other coaches think about Dylan's ability at the very, very highest level. And look, selection is always very subjective, but that's why they get paid to get the right people on the field at the right time. And this is 18 months out is a really challenging crossroads for Dylan as a player, and probably for Eddie as a coach, who's put a lot of time into Dylan, a lot of time into Mike Brown and Chris Robshaw and various other players who've got a lot of caps. And as we've said before, are they going to be able to not only hold their form, and there's questions over what holding that form looks like now, they've actually got to get better in the next 18 months.
Yeah,
you know, there's got to be growth in the team, quite considerable growth clearly over the since the six, you know, because of what happened in the Six Nations. But each individual player has got to be able to go up another notch, because other players and other teams like Ireland, Wales, France, you know, don't expect New Zealand to stand still, Australia, over the next 18 months.
Yeah, well, Brad Shields is one of the latest players who England are looking at to try and shore up their back row deficiencies. This is an interesting one because he's the Hurricanes flanker and captain. He's joining Wasps, but it'll be a new season when he comes over. Qualifies through his parents, so no question about the qualification at all. People have been making a point about, well, how come he can get off the plane and, you know, he can't have Chris Ashton? Well, it's quite simple. He's going to play in England. Now, you may have bent the laws or the rules concerning whether he's actually here or not, but the fact is he is going to be playing here, whereas Ashton and other players aren't. And that debate for me, I'm sorry, it's over. It's over. It's been proven to work. If you want to carry on going back, you knock yourself out, but the rest of us are going to carry on. And if it's an anomaly, then so be it. And for me, basically, you shut up and get on with it. But Brad Shields, interesting physically. I mean, he's a big, he's 6'4", and what if he's a much more Haskell-type thing, you know, than even a Timana Harrison, who's big in himself, but he's not the classic open side again, is he? He's just obviously, as you know, a very, very good player.
Yeah, look, I agree with you about, you know, whether he should be eligible or not. If Chris Ashton wants to be eligible for England, come back from Toulon.
Yep.
You know, that's a non-argument, as you say. Slight issue I've got with this is, you know, is he hasn't played in the English game.
Yep.
There have been players who've come over from New Zealand. He can't be all that good. Otherwise, I think New Zealand might be not bothered, you know, might be trying to hang on to him.
Yep.
I don't mean that. I'm sure he is a very good player. But we've seen it before with Tamana Harrison or O'Connor that came over to Leicester. Players who've been playing in New Zealand, playing pretty good Super Rugby. And then they come over here as being the players who are going to, you know, save a particular position in the English game. And it's not that easy. It's not that straightforward. So again, it's probably because of the dearth of players in.
Oh no, it's definitely because of the dearth. They wouldn't be considering him otherwise, because you know it's less than ideal. You would want someone who's come through the system, who you've seen from a long way out, who's familiar with players and you know, familiar with coaches and life here. But the fact is, and for some apparent, I don't know, I can't define the reason, the production line that did produce world-class sevens for a long, long time, and two or three of them at a time sometime, just seems to have completely dried up.
Well, I think there are one or two younger guys. Some of them have been injured, and that's the conundrum that Eddie has found himself in, and he's ended up with Chris back there, who, with all due respect, Chris is a fantastic player, but he's an international six, and it's been proven that at seven, he struggles to sort of make an impact or the same impact on a game that he does from six. That was proven in 2015, and Eddie saw that and even commented on it.
Exactly.
And yet 3 years later, he's still putting him there. So that's not going to solve England's problems in 2019. Whether Brad Shields will, or whether one of the Curry twins or Underhill will stay fit long enough to get enough rugby under their belt to become a standout seven. Time will tell, but the clock is ticking.
And the clock is ticking, and if it ticks out and they don't get there with at least one open side like this, I wouldn't say that their chances, you know, are absolutely gone, but I would say they're quite severely diminished if you haven't got a balanced back row. The way that international rugby, any club rugby at a very high level is going now, the back rows are crucial to break down. The breakdown is crucial to continuity, which is crucial to momentum and to point scoring, and so it goes on.
And that was probably arguably the scariest thing about this year's Six Nations is it was very clear from the start that the breakdown was a problem. The back row balance was a problem. The numbers of players in the breakdown, whether in defence or attack. And actually, it wasn't any different at the end of the Six Nations as it was at the start.
Yeah.
So what is going to change? Something has to change in South Africa, whether it's personnel or the way they're coached or the numbers of players they're trying to put into breakdowns, where we seem to have started to take more and more players out of breakdown, have less in, just as everybody else seems to be putting more players back into the breakdown. And
well, I'm not sure they do that habitually, but what I think they do is they are better at recognising the time to flood them.
Mm.
And when they do flood them, that's it, everyone's in, and they just mess the ball up completely. And they either give a penalty away or they make it completely unplayable or they turn it over.
Which is, you know, that is definitely Pro 14, as it's now called, yep. You know, and that's sort of a bit of a throwback maybe to sort of the old Scottish, Irish, Welsh days of messing up breakdowns or making, having the ability to want to get into breakdowns and either mess up the opposition ball or try and steal it or just make a nuisance of yourself, which is they've always been pretty good at. The English players seem to have stopped doing that. Now, that's not every team in the Premiership has stopped doing that, but across the board, there's not as much competition for the ball at the breakdown as there is in the Pro 14. And, I mean, there's still a fair bit in the
Top 14.
Top 14, yeah. Because, you know, there's not quite as much running and they like to just stand around and whack each other at the breakdown. But yeah. I think we've talked about this a lot where the basics of the game haven't changed and that needs to be fixed because it is a problem now and it's you're not going to win games if you don't fix it.
No. Well, we'll go on to consider the Champions Cup and the Challengers Cup. But can we just say, first of all, good luck to Rob Horn, the Northampton Saints centre. Look, he's had to retire following nerve damage to his right arm. Only 13 seconds into the Saints match 2 weekends ago. Not that old, crushing blow for him. So really sorry about that, Rob. There is life after retirement. It can be difficult. So please don't be proud. If you are struggling, Mick, sure you speak to people because the help is there. But otherwise, good luck with everything that you do. I don't know whether you'll plan to stay in the game. But whichever way you decide, I hope it's a success for you. Okay, time to turn two. Well, what was an outstanding weekend of semi-final Champions Cup rugby? Very pleased to say we can speak to Mike Ross, the former Leinster and Ireland prop. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Brian. How are you?
I am here with Rob. Tell you what, let's just take off. First, let's take off the Munster result. Although it looks close on paper, 27-22, I was quite surprised in the first half performance of Munster. It was very un-Munster-like in the sense that they allowed Rassig to take the initiative and get in their faces when usually that's one of the things that Munster do very well, and they were left chasing the game. And whilst they record the tries later on, it gave a bit of a respectability to the scoreline that I'm not sure would have been there if Racing had, you know, put the foot down in the second half as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, Munster physicality is always a given. And I thought definitely in the first half they were basically out-muscled by Racing. A couple of their tries, just simple handoffs, one-on-one errors, and they went straight through and scored. And I think they're fairly shell-shocked to be 21 points down after 20 minutes.
Yeah. Leinster, well, I felt a bit sorry for Ken Owens, you know, when he was interviewed afterwards, because the Scarlets captain, he didn't know really what to say. And I can understand why, because Scarlets didn't play particularly badly. They've got a very good team. They did certain things very well. It's just that Leinster did most things a little bit better individually and collectively. And then in aggregate, when you put that together, the periods of play where Scarlets played, they scored 3 points, and Leinster scored in fives and sevens. And then all of a sudden, you turn around after the game and think, we've been smacked. 38 points to 16. We'd never really got in this game. And, I'm not sure really how it was taken away so decisively.
Yeah, to be honest, I was very surprised with that scoreline. I thought Scarlets were probably the best Premier Welsh teams at the moment, and they won the Pro 14 last year in style. And I thought of all the semi-finalists, they probably had the best chance of beating Leinster. But, Leinster just dismantled them. I think there's a good mix there right now. There's a good mix of youth and experience. I mean, you've got Johnny Sexton, Rob Kearney, Scott Fardy, guys who've been around the block, been there and done that. And you kind of mix that up with Dan Levy and James Ryan, two young lads who haven't really known, the bitter pill of defeat. So I don't think James Ryan's lost in blue or green yet, to be honest. A bit like Mauro Itoje a couple of years ago. I hope they don't think it's like that all the time.
But, well, it might be for a bit longer. Yeah, I mean, the other thing I was writing about this and saying, you've got things like now Cian Healy and Teg Furlong. When they first came around, you could say they weren't the best scrimmages around, but they did a job. Now you're saying actually against all but the very best, they are a handful in the tight. Turner and Ryan again, not just line out forwards. They can carry. They can offload. They're instrumental in setting up these driving mauls, which, are very important. The back row, Fardy, as you say, huge player, but they've got this, not just experience, but the primary jobs are all taken care of now. When I look at the team, I think, actually, I'm not looking at areas of weakness here. I'm looking at areas of less strength, and that's a really good position to be in.
Yeah, it's took a bit of time coming. I mean, if you think about it, that they lost Claremont to the stage last year, and there's a couple of guys in the team who have learned an awful lot from that, and it's kind of on display this season. Definitely, like the Tadhg Furlong, as you said, he's a year older and wiser. He's got such good lines tour behind him, a successful Grand Slam. There's a large component of that team who made up the Grand Slam, but the other thing is they've got the hunger back too, because it's been a while since Leinster won European silverware of any kind. I think 2013 with the Amlin Cup was the last bit we won. So it's good to see them on that stage. And, I think they're the team to beat now. Obviously, Racing can do it, but it'll take a hell of a performance from them. And Leinster underperforming.
It was a really physical performance, wasn't it, from Leinster? Very direct in many ways, but... And they're so accurate. It sort of was a bit like watching Ireland, and they've got so many Irish internationals, more so than Munster. There was maybe a time when Munster had half the Irish team, Leinster had half the team. It felt at the weekend that Leinster had sort of an Irish team plus the bench, and Munster just didn't quite have that depth. And there's the physicality that they threw at Scarlets just rocked them really all the way through the game.
Yeah, the breakdown is a notable strength of theirs. I think Tadhg Byrne was talking about it afterwards. They just couldn't get a sniff. If you're just watching them, you just put it on video for other teams. This is how you rock, because they just fly in there, and they're kind of almost instantaneously the ball carrier. So there's not really a chance for anyone to get a sniff, and they're taking them out past behind the ruck, which makes it more difficult for the defensive line to set. So it just snowballs eventually, and then holes start appearing.
Mike, there was one thing that stood out for me as being illustrative of a perfect example of precision. Johnny Sexton, he put a ball up for the winger, the right-hand corner. And it was fielded by the defender. I can't now name the defender. But it was fielded and he was caught just a few metres short of his line. So when it came to getting safety, he put the ball down, as you would do, because that's the nearest thing. So you have a five-yard scrum with your putting.
Yeah.
Now, if you'd kicked that ball 5 yards further forward and he caught it just inside the in-goal area, then he touches the ball down, you have a 22. And this is the difference. This is the precision which gets you increased pressure, makes you stay there, and brings you scores. And it's that sort of thing, you know, the ability to put people there. And it's, you know, over a kick over 40, 50 metres, very easy to just drift in. And yet Sexton's putting them there. And it's the same with, you know, hands. The hands are going out. They're going in, passes are going in front to players so they can run on to moves. And they're not being stopped by those things. I just wanted to ask, to what extent is Stuart Lancaster responsible for some or any of this?
Well, he's definitely responsible for, you know, to a large degree, for Leinster's improved, I suppose you called it, control and chaos. You know, so he played, like, when I was there last year, on Tuesdays, they're the hardest training sessions of the day, and the reason for that is because Stuart would run unstructured blocks where you had to just run back and forth between the 22s trying to attack against fresher defence. So you just got exhausted running back and forth. But, you know, it was kind of developing skills under pressure.
Yep.
So he spent an awful lot of time with that. And I think you can kind of see that the way the heads-up way that Leinster are playing. You know, they'll have their starter plays. They'll have their set-piece moves. But a lot of the work has gone into the unstructured play, and you can really see it paying dividends.
Sorry, Mike, you saw that, didn't you, with Scott Fardy's try in particular, where, you know, there's a structured part of as you say, all rugby, but when, you know, Johnny Sexton took it to the line, I think James Ryan took it to the line, and after Fardy had taken it and he got back in and he offloaded behind the tackle, and that's, it's a bit like Brian was saying earlier, that they're just in the purple patch at the moment as a team, probably how Saracens felt maybe a year ago or 2 years ago when Saracens were doing their double, you just feel like you're sort of almost unbeatable, because you can, and as Ireland were through the Six Nations, you know, just finding a way, and that confidence across the team, as well as all the technical stuff, because it's all in place with the scrum, the line out, the breakdown, kicking game, and then with the space there, they'll find the space because they make the right decisions. It's really impressive to watch.
Yeah, and like I said, that's what they've been practicing and training, and there's a big belief that, you know, you train as you play, and or play as you train. So that's certainly paying dividends. But again, if you look through the team, there's a good sprinkling of experience with youth. You know, and I remember the team I played in that won in 2011, 2012. We had the same kind of mix, and you know, it's good to see it come back around again. Whereas Johnny might be the elder statesman now.
Yeah, Mike, is there any reason why they can't do the double?
No, not really. I suppose. Previously, it was always the Pro 14 final was always a week after the Heineken Cup final, as it was then. So, you know, when you won it, you had kind of had a interruption for preparation.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah,
for the final, and plus, you know, I mean, it's hard to come down off that high and roll your sleeves up and prepare again, but. They have the squad depth. They have the talent. I think they have all the tool sets to go and win it. It's just, you know, I suppose a bit of luck is required too.
Yeah. Well, we shall soon see. I wouldn't think a lot of people put a lot of money against them. Mike Ross, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Rob, they must have a decent chance. Subject, as Mike says, to focus and how much you want it. But I sort of get the feeling that, you know, with the background staff there, that this is the sort of thing they do want and the sort of thing they will impress upon the players. Look, you know, you can go on tours and whatever, but doing doubles, they don't come along very often when we're in this sort of form, this sort of purple patch, as you say. Who knows what will happen in the future? Two or three injuries, you know, a couple of Bad head knocks, loss of form. All teams run out of.
But that's what, you know, that's what Johnny Sexton and Rob Carney will be saying. They're already in the press sort of saying it. You know, this is their time to lead another Leinster sort of golden period. They won three Champions Trophies or Heineken Cups. You know, Toulon then took on the mantle. Saracens had their patch. I'm sure Saracens will come back. But this is a time to say, we're gonna win Europe. We're going to win the double. We're going to do back-to-back Europe. Can we go and win four European titles where they'd equal to lose if they win this one? Come back next year and do five, the first team to ever do five European titles. And you look at the strength in depth and the youngsters they've got coming through, you wouldn't bet against them doing that because they've got players. And they do seem to have got maybe more of the island team within one team. It's almost it's almost like Ireland Mark II. And that gives them
well,
the
look,
continuity.
I wrote this. They are stronger as a side than some of the international teams.
Absolutely.
Quite a lot of the international teams, actually.
Yeah, well, you look at the bench, you know, the players they got coming off the bench at the weekend. Players who are actually starting for Ireland coming off the bench for Leinster.
Yes, which is an incredible thing. And it is almost like Exeter, but with bigger attacking dimensions. You know, Exeter could get there.
I think just need a bit more. You know, in the end, slightly better quality players because Leinster are doing it with pretty much international quality across the board and with internationals on the bench. Exeter have got outstanding players, but they're not doing it with a team full of international experienced players.
No,
so these guys, the Leinster guys, have done it in an international shirt as well. And they're doing it week in, week out for Ireland.
Very interesting what he said about Stuart Lancaster's influence.
Yeah, and look, and Stuart, as everybody knows, is a good coach. Whatever went on in that lead up to 2015, you know, Stuart will, we don't go over that ground, but, you know, he's obviously gone in there. He's slightly under the radar. Leo Cullen is taking all the sort of the Irish heat, if there is any Irish heat from the media, and you know what the pressures on Leinster must be in Dublin, because you know there must be a lot of pressure on this group of players. And Stuart can just get on the field, get his tracksuit on, and just look at, analyse games, analyse the players. I mean, look, there's some very good players there to work with. You've got, you know, Sexton's probably pulling a lot of strings. You've got a lot of talent. But whatever they're doing, they are better side undoubtedly at the back end of this season than they were at the back end of last season. So the work that goes on the training field is coming through. And we've said this before, you know, Mike Ross has been involved in that. We don't need to go and watch them train. We just need to watch them play and go, they look like they know what they're doing.
Exactly.
They're well organised.
Yes.
You know, they know exactly what. Now that comes off the training field.
Yeah. Okay, time to move on to the Pro 14. Pleased to say we can speak to the former Dragons, Blues, Wasps, Wales and Lions number 8, Andy Powell. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Brian. How's things, mate?
All right, mate. We've got a final round of Pro 14 fixtures as the country's teams face each other. They haven't been able to necessarily come up with clever marketing names for all of them, but it's called Judgment Day down in Wales, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great for the fans. You know, it's hopefully we can get some good weather, and you know, it's great for everybody to come out, bring the kids along, and you know, watch some great, exciting rugby.
Well, Dragons edited Scarlets, and Blues Ospreys. Different fortunes, obviously. Scarlets be, I think, very disappointed, you know, and Cardiff seem at the moment to have got things together a bit better. Certainly better than the last few seasons.
Yeah, like you just said, I think, you know, it's going to be a big loss for Cardiff with Danny Wilson going, you know. So I think, you know, they're playing very well, you know, they're playing with a lot of confidence at the minute, and you can see that. Then Ospreys on the weekend losing, you know, it's going to be a great game. But then for the Dragons as well, they've got something to prove. They've got a lot of, you know, big signings for next year. So it's dependent on well, how the Scots react from a loss on the weekend, you know, and, you know, they did have a heavily big loss to Leinster.
Well, you saw that, I'm sure, and a lot of people did. And I was just saying, you know, when Ken Owens was interviewed afterwards, he was almost nonplussed because he obviously looked at the scoreboard and thought, oh, that's a fair drubbing. But, you know, we didn't play that badly. But Leinster were just a bit better all round in everything they did. And they just, it was a sort of game was taken away quite early from Scarlets in a way which I don't think they sort of anticipated. So I don't think that's happened to them before. Could it seriously dent them, or have they got just too many good players in the end?
No, I don't think it will dent them. I think they'll learn from it. I think, you know, with the coaching staff there, Stephen Jones and Wayne Pivock, I think they'll, you know, they'll gather the troops together. They'll learn from it. And, you know, I know what the team they're like. They'll probably turn up on a weekend and they could give the Dragons a good thrashing. So it's one of those. But I think going back to Leinster, I think they were just so clinical on the weekend in what they did. You know, I heard what you were talking to with Rob Andrew beforehand, you know, on the training ground, they probably, you know, they know each other inside out very well. And I think Stuart Lancaster has been a big part of that.
We talked a bit through the Six Nations about the maybe a bit of buoyancy in sort of the Welsh game. And I just wonder how you feel around the strength of the regions, some of the players, the younger players that played through the Six Nations, a lot of back row forwards sort of stepping up with all the injuries that Wales had. And whether in Wales itself, obviously being down there, there's a sense that the regions are starting to just start to get it together. Cardiff, obviously now in the Cup European final as well. And there's maybe just a sense of things on the move across all the regions and trying to get somewhere near that sort of strength and depth that the Irish provinces have got.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it does take time. You know, it did with Ireland, and, you know, you probably look at them now and they're probably, I'd probably say they're ranked probably the second best in the team, probably from New Zealand. Uh-huh. So it is coming with Wales. And the Dragons have gone on to make a lot of good signings for next year. So I think I think next year is going to be a real, you know, a stepping stone for Welsh rugby. And I think the big thing for Wales at the minute, they've blooded a lot of youngsters, you know, in the Six Nations and in the Autumn Internationals. So, you know, with that experience now on their shoulders, you know, it's only going to put them in good stead in the future.
Andy, one of the problems I foresaw, and was certainly the case a couple, two or three years ago, was a problem. I described it as sort of being half pregnant in a sense that the regions were dependent on the WRU financially, but the WRU didn't give them enough money, you know, to really get their act together, but nor did they give them the autonomy to go their own way and raise the investment because they wanted the central contracts and they want to control the players. And I said, unless you get one of these improved, unless the money comes in either from outside or it comes from the WRU, you're still going to have a situation where you're competing against contracts that are worth more money outside, and that would be difficult keeping your players. But then if you do keep them, you're going to have substantially more investment. So I just wonder how, I know it's a bit of a complicated conundrum, but I wonder how the dealing with that balance.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? And then they brought that 60 cap rule in, which Wales have brought, you know, just probably to keep them players in Wales. Otherwise, the fans are going to get pretty dismissed after that. So it's a grey area. But I think they're only doing it to save their own backs, really, you know, just to keep all these players in Wales. And that's probably why Wales are probably starting to improve over the last year. So, you know, as long as it keeps improving, you know, it's only going to benefit Wales in the long term.
Will the players wear this in terms of salaries, though? Because professional careers are quite short. They're well aware of that. They're well aware of the fact that there may be only one injury, one concussion away from not playing again. At some point, they'll want to make a bigger payday. Will they wait for 60 caps?
Oh, you know, if you do get an opportunity to go abroad for big money, you know, I will knock on, it's like Reece Webb at the minute, you know, he's made that decision. You know, I think playing that well in Toulon, I think they should still be able to pick him. But, you know, they brought that law in, the silly law in my eyes, but it's only a number in it. But, you know, that's...
Well, I'd also make this point as well, Andy. Sorry to butt him, is that people have got to be aware that unlike the English game, where, you know, the English game is still, I mean, they're trying to get better, they are getting better, but he's still got a lot of middle-class lads in there whose families, you know, have got, you know, they're reasonably well off and they can go back to jobs that will open up. The Welsh game is full of lads who, you know, when they come out, they won't be in professions and so on. They won't have that. You know, their working class roots dictate almost that they really do have to make much more of this than say someone who's, you know, from a reasonably well off background, you know, in another country.
No, I totally agree. It's a bit like myself. I'm back on the construction site now, getting my hands this weekend. So I agree with what you're saying. You know, you do have to look after the money and you've got it, and when it does come around, you should take these opportunities because you never have them again.
Yeah.
I think one person, well, sticks to my mind is Chris Ashton.
Yes.
You know, I think what he's done in Toulon, and I think England are missing a player like him at the minute as well.
That's a fair point. Yeah,
it's interesting, the whole sort of dual contract bit as well, isn't it, with Wales. From a player welfare point of view, if the Welsh Rugby Union can put enough money on the table to get the players back, and obviously one or two have come back, as well as there's always somebody leaving and somebody coming back, like Lee Halfpenny. Just getting that balance right so that you can actually keep enough of the high-profile players in Wales so that that encourages supporters and it enthuses the next generation of kids. And as we saw with Cardiff on the weekend, what was there, 11,000 in Cardiff watching the Blues? You know, that's probably as big a crowd as they've had for a while. And it's a difficult balancing act. But I think Ireland have shown how you know, effectively a small playing base can actually pull together and actually produce not only good sides in Europe because the players are looked after, but obviously then that works with a national team as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100% agree. And I think one thing with England as well, you know, you've got the Championship, there's always relegation and it's promotion. I think with Wales, when you go below the Pro 12, you've got the, you know, it's the Premiership. And there's no relegation, there's no promotion. So keeping these big players in Wales is a big asset for bringing youngsters through, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go on to your the coaching. You're Brecon in Division 1 East, the WR National League.
One East.
Is that right? How are you finding it? Because I've always thought that coaching is for a certain breed of people. I never wanted a job where I did a really good job and 15 people mess it up and I get fired. I just couldn't cope with that. But you've obviously got a different mindset to me.
No, I tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I never thought I'd be a coach, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. You know, I think I've worked under a lot of good coaches in my time. I've had 14 different clubs, so
yeah.
I think I was probably very hard to manage as a player. So, I think, you know, taking that little bit of advice off each and one coach, I think, you know, I think I got good man management skills, I think, you know, and I don't think you're born with that either, you know. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's going well.
Well, you'll certainly be good if they need any advice on the highway code, won't you, Andy?
Well,
so, hey, mate, it's great. It's great to speak to you, mate. Take care.
Hey, you too. Thank you. Take care.
Andy Paul. I'm just waiting when he's disciplining someone. I can just imagine, you know, speaking to them and then looking at him and thinking, I can't believe. And they say, listen, I know I did some things wrong in my time, but I'm in charge now. But there you go.
Everybody grows up.
No, everyone does grow up. You're quite right. And look, at that level where I imagine he's either not being paid or not being paid very much.
I suspect, you know, not being paid at all.
Yeah, then, you know, it's very important that players who've got a lot of experience, as I say, being coached by a lot of people, can give their time back, which is great. So good luck to you there, Andy. If you didn't know, the women's game comes to an absolute crescendo this weekend because Quins are playing Sarries. They're playing them at Ealing Trailfinders on Sunday the 29th at 3 p.m. Very pleased to say we can speak to Rachel Burford, the Quins ladies captain. Good evening, Rachel.
Hello.
Rachel, they've got the two best sides, certainly the two best sides performing over this season. Sarries have got a lot of power. The Cleals, Marley Packer. I get the impression you've got one or two outstanding backs, some a lot of pace, And I think, is it a question of you just having to front up physically and then trying to make sure that your better attacking options come in, or is it more threat there that from Sarries?
I think they've shown that they've got more than just their physicality in the Kills and Packer. And mm-hmm. They've definitely got some young backs there that can do damage if they're given space and opportunity to play into. But, you know, for us, I think we definitely have the edge over them in the back line. And I would say maybe we're on a par in terms of the physicality up front, because we've got a real handful of players that are really physical as well. But we understand what the threats are in terms of the Cleals and of Paco, and we know that we need to take them out of the game, in the right sense, and try and stop them from playing, because they give the Saracens a huge go forward, which could give them their backs the platform to play off. So we've got to try and stop that.
Well, if you can take them out without getting caught, it doesn't really matter. It's in the wrong sense, does it? I never said that. Well, if the what are the relative kicking games like? Because if there's any area in which the women's game isn't as good as the men's, and actually, I think mm-hmm. in some ways it's more attractive because it's not, because people can't kick as long and they don't kick as far, and therefore the ball is in hand more. But who has got the better kicking game, do you think?
Well, I think it's quite hard to say. Obviously, you've got Zoe Harrison playing for them, who's an England fly half now. She got capped this season. So she's got a really strong boot on her. And then you look on our side, we've got Ellie Green, who's a 17-year-old. It's like her fifth game in the Premiership. She has a great boot on her, but, you know, obviously she hasn't got the same experience as what Zoe has. So, you know, potentially they might have the edge over in terms of the distance of the game, but we've got a couple of kickers within the side with Leanne and with Ellie as well that can do little nudges through. So maybe not necessarily the big long kicks, but little kicks to score and little chip overs or crossfield kicks to a couple of our flyers. It's probably where we edge it, and then the opposition probably edge where they can get the territorial game a little bit better.
Rachel, it's obviously the first year of the new Premier League, if you like, and sort of almost a bit of a first year for Quinns, really, in terms of how they've taken on the women's game. And obviously fantastic to get to the final. What changes have you seen, and where do you think the women's 15-a-side game has moved in this year, and where do you think it can go over the next few years?
I think the standout part for me is the talent that's happening on the pitch and the standard that has completely raised the season. I don't think I've been a part of the previous Premiership where it's been this competitive at the top of the table. Most teams now, you have to go along and you have to perform in order to get the result that you want to get. And, you know, previous years, you knew who were going to be maybe your tough games, and then you knew people who you would be able to beat week in, week out. So I think what's come from that is the foundations that are being laid now at all the Tyrrell Premier 15s club is now having right support in terms of medical and S&C and people having a training programme, whereas, you know, previously England internationals or other internationals have all that set up, but your normal club players don't get any of that. And now that's being catered for, and you can see that directly having an impact on the pitch. You know, they're training harder, their strengths are getting better, and they're able to transfer that onto a rugby pitch. So I think in terms of the standard of the game, it's improved. And I think over the next 2 years, we're only going to see that increase. And ultimately, we're going to see the standard of women's rugby grow. And hopefully that will, you know, benefit England women's rugby as well.
Will this extend to clubs who, look, we understand they're nascent and it's very difficult from almost a standing start, but Worcester have had several big points defeats, and no one likes to see that because, you don't gain that much from being beaten that heavily, and you don't learn that much from actually doing it. Can we see those sides maybe halving those deficits and then in the following seasons doing that again so that they're getting closer? Because I think you've got to give them the 3 years, otherwise it's pointless establishing the franchises and being where they are. So, but do you detect that sort of will be done, the big gaps between the top and bottom will narrow sufficiently?
Yeah, I do think so. I think, you know, hopefully everybody's been, you know, finding this season, finding their feet. There's been quite a few teething problems. And obviously people have moved around. You know, it's become this competitive environment now where players want to go where they're going to feel their most benefit. And mm-hmm. and that's, there's been a lot of change in people who, what clubs they play. You know, we sit in the men's all the time and we hadn't normally seen that in the women's game before. So now players are thinking about what, how they can get the best out of themselves and moving. So Worcester did lose a lot of international players, which were, you know, like the core of that club. But however, you know, they've got a real young squad. And it's going to take time for that squad to develop and to come on and be more competitive and more physical. And absolutely, I agree with you. You know, you've got to give them the 3 years, the opportunity to develop and grow and recruit. So I definitely think, you know, they'll be working very hard in order to drop those deficits and to hopefully, you know, aim for to win in some next season.
Yeah. Rachel, the best of luck for you. I'm supposed to say neutral, but as it was a Quinn's captain, I'm going to cheer. I'll certainly look at the result from a slightly multicoloured perspective.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let me just reiterate again. It's the inaugural Terrells Premier 15s final at Ealing Trailfinders this Sunday. It's also the National Girls Under 15 and Under 18 Cup finals. They'll be played earlier in the day, 11 a.m. and 12:45 p.m. respectively. Kids go free, completely free, and adults are just a tenner. So Ealing Trailfinders, get along there and you'll see the best of the women's and girls' games. And bearing in mind the advances they've made, actually, I can promise you, they'll be well worth watching. And the biggest thing that I've found that is absolutely wonderful is that I can now go along to these games and just be miserable straight away. In a way that I can be with men's games and start saying, that's not right, that's not right, didn't do that, why isn't that happening? Without saying, oh, but you understand they're under 15 girls or whatever. You. No accommodation for that, don't need to be patronising, they don't want to be patronised, and I promise you if you go, you'll be quite surprised at the standard, so please support that final day. Kids, you're free, and adults are a tenner. Rob, Manu Tuilagi is returning for Leicester, pivotal match against the Falcons. Not saying it will definitely decide who is in the playoffs, but it'll go a long way towards it, won't it?
Yeah, well, I think it will go, especially if Newcastle win. I think given where they're 2 points ahead of Leicester already, if Newcastle do win that, and I just wonder whether Dino had not only half an eye, I think he had both eyes on this Friday as opposed to last Friday against Gloucester. You know, I'm sure he went down to Gloucester wanting to win, but with his team selection and for Newcastle to get in the playoffs, it's a massive thing for them. Quite frankly, much bigger than winning the European Challenge Cup, I think. Tough ask, but, you know, we both know.
Really? What... No, really the winning a trophy?
Well, yeah, I think judging where Newcastle have come from, where Dean has taken the team, the Premiership getting into the top four, getting into the playoffs, would be a massive step for Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And you just look at arguably the way that the team they picked, the way they played a little bit down at Gloucester, it didn't feel to me as if they were putting their whole season on the line in that Gloucester game. And we both know what Dean is like. Dean would love to go to Leicester on a Friday night with another team and win and possibly end Leicester's hopes in the playoffs and get Newcastle into the Premiership playoffs for the first time.
Yeah, and Manu Tuilagi, I've keep saying this, best of luck to him, hope he lasts, must be doubtful, but until he do, just leave him alone and let him play and see what comes out the other end.
Yeah, it's such a shame, it's not a wasted talent yet, it might be in 3 or 4 years' time if we're still talking about it in these terms, but he just hasn't had any luck with injury, hasn't been able to get any form. And you just got to wish him well and hope he can stay on the field for not just for one game, but for one or two seasons, because that's what he hasn't done for such a long time.
And the rest of the fixtures, which have some bearing on the playoffs, Exeter Sale Sharks, it's a difficult place to go and take the points that you actually need, isn't it, for Sale?
Yeah, I suspect that's probably a step too far for Sale. They've had a pretty good season, and at one stage they were sort of looking like they might get into the playoffs. But you know, when it comes, when push comes to shove, after the Six Nations and the Exeters and the Saracens and the sort of Wasps and Leicesters start to get that, they start to get a move on, they start to get their best players back, and they start to just get ahead of steam. Sometimes the likes of Newcastle and maybe Gloucester, maybe Sale, steal a bit of a march during the Six Nations because they might pick up more points than the sides that are losing their internationals.
Yeah.
Gives a slightly false picture, and it usually sorts itself out by the time you get around, you know, to round 2021, and the top four normally deserve to be.
Well, Worcester Quinns, nothing riding on that. London Irish, Sarries, unfortunately for London Irish, you know, the drop is there, and Sarries are starting to play well again. So let's look at the remaining two. Wasps, Northampton shambles this year, just like, you know, Quinns really need a wholesale clearance,
and yet they went to Leicester and how, you know, won,
because that's
won
a,
at Leicester,
you know, because that's a Midland derby.
Well, of course, that's why. Absolutely,
that's
of course
the only reason.
And it, you know, it was a sort of really surprising performance by Leicester. Fair play to Northampton; they went there and they did the derby thing. Leicester will be kicking themselves really because should have they underperformed. Northampton have got good players. They've had a rotten season from start to finish. Wasps, you know, Wasps will still fancy themselves.
You know, Wasps, from where they were with the promise they showed 18 months ago, you know, not where I thought they might be. They've lost a couple of players, but, you know, and players like Haskell have obviously, they're getting older and so on. But when you looked at that back line and you saw the amount of talent they had to come off the bench even.
Yeah.
I thought they can keep this upward trajectory, you know, quite steep. Then they would certainly be in advance of where I see them at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to finish in the top four. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They haven't quite pushed on to that level of consistency, perhaps. They were sort of closer 18 months ago, and it's always a little bit unsettling when you're in a year where they've clearly had to make decisions about Cipriani and Haskell, and that was obviously going on around Christmas.
Yep.
And that, so these things just, they get into the club a little bit, and no matter how well you try and manage it, it's difficult. You know, when Cipriani may have wanted to stay, but Sopoanga has been signed from New Zealand, Shields has been signed from New Zealand, so Haskell's probably been told, we haven't got room for you, salary cap or whatever. And it is unsettling, there's no doubt about that.
And the West Country derby, Gloucester, Bath, well, there might have been a lot more riding on that if Bath hadn't been, you know, in the form that they're in, which is none at all. But Gloucester, as a season, not quite what they, I don't think what they wanted, but they're moving in the right direction. It's whether they can keep going there, because we've seen this before with Gloucester. We've seen them promise stuff, look over the fence and just not make that jump.
Yeah, and that's now, you know, that's Johan Ackermann's turn to have a go, isn't it?
Yep.
To try, you know, and a little bit, you know, Quinns have now got to work out who are they going to bring in next to try and do it. Bath have had three goes, you know, with Bruce Craig. He tried Ian McGeachan, he tried Mike Ford, Todd Blackadder. Where's he going to go next? Because, you know, these guys don't like being down at the bottom of the table. It'll still be a great West Country derby, there's no doubt. And Gloucester probably flattered a little bit at the start of the season, and now they've sort of been caught by the others. But, you know, two giants, really, and they've got another giant joining them in the West Country next year with Bristol, with the bloke who's got even more money than the two
than
guys.
Than anyone else.
You know, so the pressure's always on at Gloucester and Bath, and they're finding it difficult to find a way of getting up to that top four and staying there.
Well, that's all we have time for this week on Brian Moore's Full Contact. Thank you to my co-host, Rob Andrew, and as always, to my producer, Abby Patterson. Remember, please subscribe to the podcast because it's completely free, and that way you'll never miss an episode. Please also leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help more people find us. We'll be back next week, but for now, goodbye.